Support for Science Friday comes from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, offering advanced genomic testing that may reveal other treatment options for cancer patients. Learn more at cancercenter.com.
This is Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow with Bill Nye, the science guy, America's engineer. And Bill is head of the Planetary Society. Keeps track of all these things in the heavens that are going on, right?
Well, we promote space exploration and space science.
And speaking of space, the next few weeks, there's some interesting things going to happen with the moon.
Oh, yes.
Right?
We have a total eclipse, yeah?
Right.
Monday or Tuesday, depending where you are. And a total eclipse of the moon. Can you look at it? Will you go blind? No, you can look at an eclipse of the moon, everybody.
Let me just
the moon.
Well, that's good, because we went out in New York to Times Square and asked people about if they actually knew what an eclipse of the moon was, and this is some of the answers we got.
Well, it's the moon where it's being blocked by the Earth, causing a shadow. Just never stare into it.
Is the lunar eclipse the one you're supposed to use the little mirror and look at the reflection of it instead of looking directly at it? It's one of the two, right? There's only two kinds of eclipses.
It's when between the rotation of the moon and the sun and it blocks the sun, but it's a lunar eclipse, so it's going to be at nighttime, right? That's all I know.
Well, Bill, they got that part right, right?
Generally, though, I feel that I failed.
You fail.
As a science educator.
Because.
Oh, well, because these people, they're a little confused, just a little. But, of course, you cherry-picked or you picked those answers for hilarious NPR comedic effect.
No, I kid you not, as another TV host used to say. Those were basically a good sampling of the answers we got.
Yeah, so it is, but it is a thing that happens often enough. One of the questions that I asked myself as a kid, why don't we have a lunar eclipse every month?
And you as a kid answered?
Well, my father, who, among other things, taught astronomy merit badge, kind of gave me, for the Boy Scouts, gave me kind of an earful about it. But the moon's orbit is tilted.
Mm.
And so it's wobbling, in a sense, in inertial space with respect to, or it appears to be wobbling with respect to the Earth. So anyway, everything's got to line up in the line of Apsides.
Line of Apsides.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so it happens now and then, but there's some subtle aspects of it. The thing that I find so compelling, really, everybody, about a lunar eclipse, apparently, is where the ancient Greeks noticed that every time one happens, the shadow is round. And the ancient Greeks figured out that the Earth is a ball. They got
that.
Wasn't flat. Some long time before Queen Isabella and people.
Wow. Well, let me bring in another voice on this and expound on some of this. Andrew Fracknoy is chair of the astronomy department at Foothill College in Los Altos Hills, California. Andrew, welcome back to Science Friday.
Nice to be back with you, and hello, Bill.
Hello, Andrew.
You have any other lore, Andrew, that you could add to the lunar eclipse?
Well, sure. Lunar eclipses have been seen for centuries, and we should tell your listeners that this is the safe one. That since it's perfectly okay to look at the full moon, and it's the full moon that's going to get dark, nobody needs to be scared or keep their children indoors for this sky spectacular. But probably the most famous case of an eclipse was when Christopher Columbus, on his fourth voyage in 1504, got stranded on the island of Jamaica, and eventually his crew mutinied and began to rob and kill the natives, and they no longer got good supplies from the natives as a result of this. And Columbus was in despair how he was going to keep going till he could be rescued there. And he was doing what so many of us do when we're in despair. He was reading an astronomy book, and he found out that there was going to be a lunar eclipse coming up. And he warned the native chief that his god was more powerful than the native chief's god and will make the moon go away. And the native chief scowled, but indeed there was an eclipse and the moon did go away. And then Columbus did get supplied until his rescue ship arrived. So you never know when reading astronomy books will be useful in life.
Well, it just shows you that knowledge is power.
Right. There you go. So what I think our listeners need to know about this eclipse is it's coming up, as you guys said, on Monday evening and mostly on Tuesday morning. It's a late night owls kind of an eclipse. So in the western part of the United States, we'll start seeing it about 11 p.m. and it'll be over by about 2:30. But those of you on the East Coast, it won't start till about 2 a.m., and it'll be over about 5:30. So for those on the East Coast, you may want to go to sleep and get up early, whereas those of us on the West Coast will stay up and watch the eclipse.
Now, there are a couple of human man-made satellites that are going around the moon, and there's talk that one of them may be in danger of losing its solar power during the lunar eclipse.
That's right. There's a spacecraft called LADEE, which is orbiting the moon and is depending on solar power, although when it goes behind the moon, it goes back to batteries. So what's going to happen this time is that as it orbits the moon and expects the sunlit side of the moon to resupply it with power, it's not going to happen. Because during the lunar eclipse, if you watch a lunar eclipse from the moon, what happens is that the big fat body of the Earth blocks the sun as seen from the moon. So this LADEE spacecraft will go through the dark shadow of the Earth. And there's some question about whether or not the systems will freeze up. They don't really know. And the spacecraft is already set for its doom. It's going to be crashed into the moon no matter what, April 21st. But there's some small possibility that it will freeze up as it goes through the lunar eclipse. And NASA's actually taking bets on when the spacecraft will meet its end.
For all you celestial mechanicians out there, you can take your chances.
That's right. You can actually go to a NASA website and put in your bet, and they have a prize for the person who comes closest. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is what we want the government to be doing, but it's an interesting idea.
There's also the Lunar Reconnaissance Satellite, I think.
LRO.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Those spacecraft are in much better shape. I think they have a larger battery. This is the LADEE was a very small and cheap mission. I think the other ones are going to be fine.
Lunar
atmosphere
dust. But
it's going to be spectacular.
Yeah. Okay. So I went out in the parking lot to try to watch the other one crash, and you can't see it.
Bill, do you do lunar or eclipse parties?
Well, I probably wouldn't do a lunar eclipse party.
Yeah.
But you can become a solar eclipse chaser. You can get hooked on that. That is pretty wild.
Yeah, that's one I haven't done yet, although there's one in 2017 coming up.
Yeah, well, they come in pairs. So
we should tell our listeners that in August 2017, there will be a U.S. eclipse. This is very rare. It will only be visible from the United States. It will be a total eclipse of the sun, the much rarer kind, and the one that you do have to watch your eyes when you're watching it. And there'll be a lot of excitement because it doesn't go through a single large city in the United States, although it can be seen all over the United States. The direct path where it's darkest will not go through any major city. So this is the revenge of the rural population, that only rural areas will have the eclipse as a total eclipse.
But the good news is that you could just go on a highway somewhere, right?
That's right.
That's right. Throughout the United States,
sure,
there will be a path,
highways,
and we'll talk more about this when it gets closer. But this will be a wonderful eclipse for people to try to see in August of 2017.
Now, solar eclipses come in pairs, yeah?
There's patterns. For example, this lunar eclipse is part of a quadruple pattern.
Right, exactly. That's what I was going to ask you.
Called a tetrad.
Yeah.
And so the nice thing about this lunar eclipse is if you can't stay up or get up this Monday night or Tuesday morning, there'll be three more lunar eclipses that will be total and will be visible. And the next one will be October 8th. 2014, and then we'll have one in April and September of 2015. So we've got a quadruple treat in the sky for Science Friday listeners.
And this is a feature of the nature of the lunar orbit and its tilt with respect to the Earth and the sun.
That's right.
You get
there are complex patterns in the motions of the bodies relative to each other.
And there are, speaking of treats, I was out last night looking up in the sky, and I saw there are some shining planets out there, but there was Mars. I couldn't believe how bright it was, and I wasn't quite sure it was Venus. I knew where it should be. It was in the wrong place of the sky for Venus, but I'm looking at Mars, and I'm saying, wow, this has got to be a rare event. It is. It's red. You could see it, and it is a great time to look at it, is it not?
It's true. Mars is in what we call opposition, and that means that the planet Mars is opposite the sun in the sky. This happens about every 2 years, And so right now, if you think of the two planets as describing different orbits like racetrack paths or lanes, the Earth in its orbit and Mars in its orbit are sort of getting aligned with each other, are getting into the in the same place.
And the Earth has the inside track and it's catching up.
Yeah. There, that nicely put. Thank you. So the Earth has the inside track, Mars has the outside track, and the two are getting abreast of each other. That's the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And so for a while, Mars is going to be quite close and quite bright. And actually, the closest moment will be roughly the day of the eclipse, the evening of the eclipse. It will be about 56 million miles away from Mars.
Oh, that's nothing. That's nothing.
That's, yeah. I mean, on cosmic terms, that's nothing. And so that'll be a good time. All of April will be a good time. Mars, when it's in opposition, rises as the sun sets and sets as the sun rises. So you can see the bright red dot of Mars all night long.
Bill, as head of the Planetary Society, we're talking about planets now. What do you think the public doesn't know or should know or is needs to know most about planets and things?
Well, about that, when we invest in planetary exploration at, in the United States at NASA, that's where we make these extraordinary discoveries. This we talk about all the time. This planetary science is what NASA is doing best right now, and so that's where we should be spending money. $1.5 billion a year, Ira. It's nothing, and yet there's always pressure to cut it back. If we were to find evidence of life on another world, specifically. This is to say, if you were to find it on Mars or Europa or Enceladus, mm-hmm. or somewhere in between on asteroids, it would utterly change the world. It would change the world, and you'd do it for a very reasonable price. So what we want to do someday is get everybody to agree that sending people to Mars is worthwhile. I mean, a real, serious, fully funded mm-hmm. program to send people to Mars. And have them look around for signs of water and life. That has the yeah. greatest potential to change things. When you go to solve problems that have never been solved before, that's when you get innovations, and that's what keeps the United States ahead. I mean, I was born here, so that's what I want to do. I want the United States to remain technically advanced.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Andrew Fracknoy and Bill Nye, do you think there's a chance that we would be? Why? How about an international?
Well, yes, bring it on, sure.
Yeah, because it's very expensive to go to Mars.
Very expensive,
right?
And it's in everybody's best interest around the world to look for signs of life on other worlds.
What so, about robots instead of people?
Well, we always go with robots first.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Andrew.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say that this is exactly what is, I think, so exciting about the space program and the good work that the Planetary Society is doing in supporting it, is that we have these remarkable robot representatives on Mars. The Curiosity rover, for example, which is establishing more and more clearly that ancient Mars actually had water on it.
Very
well. There
wet.
Was a long yeah. period of time where there were lakes and rivers on Mars, and that's why, as Bill says, it's possible that long ago life actually started on Mars just like it did on Earth, and that we're finding with our robot spacecraft reservoirs of water in this little moon around Saturn called Enceladus, where we see saltwater steam geysers coming out of frozen cracks on this tiny moon. So the exploration that's made possible by our scientific instruments, quite separate from people, is already quite remarkable. And the solar system is becoming, in a sense, our own backyard as our robot representatives look around and send us back these fantastic images from the planets and the moons.
Mm-hmm. And let's all keep in mind, next year we're going to get images of Pluto up close in 2015 from the New Horizons mission. So these missions are all great. They're great. And Planetary Society, we support them as best we can. We advocate in the U.S. Congress and so on for these missions. But when humans get involved, that's when everybody is much more engaged. So the other scientific argument or engineering argument is what our best rovers, driven by our best rover drivers, designed by our best rover engineers, our best rover machinists, what those spacecraft do in a week, a human explorer can do in about a minute. So if we had some extraordinary or very compelling place to look on, let's say, Mars, to look for signs of life, that would justify or mandate or insist, we would insist on sending people there. But it's an extraordinary thing, and involving people around the world, space agencies around the world, is certainly a very reasonable way to do it.
Do we need another Cold War?
Well, that's what people talk about all the time. I mean, does everybody know that the Chinese Space Administration has a rover on the moon? Does everybody know that? Yeah. Jade Rabbit, U2? And so it did very well. I mean, and I've been to China. I've met with the Chinese Space Administration officials, and they have a steady thing. We're going to do this. Now we're going to do this. We're going to do this as they march out into space. And the reason they're doing it is the same reason everybody does it. It just enriches your culture. What it does is it raises everybody's expectations. When you dare to do mighty things, you achieve them. And so by dreaming big, you accomplish big things. We wouldn't have the internet. We wouldn't have people on other sides of the continent coming in on live radio, crystal clear ISDN lines. We wouldn't have any of this stuff, let alone these lights that are in this studio and these cameras. We wouldn't have any of that without the U.S. space program.
All right. We're going to leave it right there because we've run out of time. Wow. I want to thank both of you, Andrew Fracknoy, chair of the astronomy department at Foothill College in Los Altos Hills, California, and Bill Nye, the science guy, America's engineer. Bill, would you come back?
Oh, I should like it of all things.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have
Thanks you.
We'll make you a regular feature on Science Friday. Maybe we'll see. We'll talk about that.
We'll talk.
We'll talk.
We'll have some cold water and we'll talk.
All right.